Hey, Podnuts. Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break-fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 468, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Allish. I'm joined today by Mark Cobb from Computer Techs Reno. How you doing again, Mark?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I am doing awesome. Glad to have you back on the show, man. It's been, I think we were just saying, like a little bit over a year?
Yes.
Very cool. So you've got a lot of things, obviously, in a year's time, you've got a lot of things that have probably went on in your business. You've got some things that I've talked about in the past with other technicians on different shows. But why don't you go ahead and start off? Obviously, everybody, if they don't know you, they can go back and listen to episode 440, or there's even a couple episodes before that and kind of get to know you a little bit better. But let's go ahead and get started with what you wanted to talk about today.
Okay. Yeah, I think you were mentioning I was even on episode 22 or something way early.
Yes.
Back then. So, yeah, I've been around a little while. Again, I started my business in 2003, just doing residential computers. Don't really want the, first of all, I got a family that I don't want to call at 3 a.m. saying, you know, hey, our server's down, get over here right away. So I don't want to be stuck that. So I'm just doing residential customers. You know, they don't need they're not real time sensitive on, when their computer gets fixed most of the time. Since our last conversation, one of the things that I'd rolled out about a year ago was my computer maintenance plan. And basically, I've taken my clients that I used to see a lot, some that I didn't see a lot, and I've told them, you know, let's set a schedule, and I'm recommending 3 months. Where, you know, 3 months from today, we're going to book an appointment for me to remotely connect to your computer, go through, you know, make sure you have all your updates, latest Java, Flash, Adobe Reader. You know, I'm going to check your hard drive, make sure it's okay. I'm going to, scan for malware, just check all the settings, make sure nothing. And, you know, these are some of kind of the high behind the scenes things, but I'm looking for, you know, make sure the host file isn't being redirected, looking for, you know, browser settings, make sure there's no, nothing wonky in there, delete temp files, all that kind of stuff. I've got a list that I provide them if they're curious what I do, but basically I spend about an hour remotely, working on their computer. And then once I'm done, we set the next 3 month appointment. Okay. So a couple things, and why I do it this way versus, say, I know some companies that are doing the MSP thing. don't throw up in your mouth.
Okay.
First of all, it gives them a chance or us a chance to talk. You know, they can ask me questions. A lot of times, you know, they might say, oh, I've had a problem with this. Do you recommend this or whatever? And then we just hang up and then I work for the remaining of the hour, kind of doing their things. A lot of my stuff is automated through, I'm using RepairTech's TechWaru to, you know, just run, you know, about 20 different tools and scripts and stuff to kind of go over things. So it's pretty well automated and I can still talk while some of the tools are running. However, I do get in there and, for example, auto runs, it's set to run auto runs and I'll actually go through and look at everything on auto runs, make sure that everything looks, you know, normal. There's not some weird file in a temp directory that, you know, doesn't look normal ever. So I'm doing some hands-on stuff. It's not just all automated tools. So I'm giving a little more service than just, you know, some program monitoring their system. Second of all, they aren't just buying my service. You know, they're buying me. You know, we have a little chit chat up front. You know, how are the grandkids? How was your trip to Arizona? That kind of stuff. So, you know, it reminds me that I'm their tech. You know, I'm the guy they go to. And hopefully when they get that call from the fake Microsoft or get a pop-up in 3 weeks from, you know, a website that says they've got problems with their computer, I'm hoping that they're going to be calling me rather than the number flashing on their screen. So it kind of, you know, just kind of, you know, I'm more in their face than, say, an automated program that just runs all the time and they pay a bill for.
Right. Okay.
And lastly, I think it kind of locks them in as my client. You know, again, they're loyal to me. I'm maintaining their computer. I'm doing it every 3 months. And so it makes them loyal to me. And I think that's a little bit more than just, you know, an MSP provides where an automated program runs. However, saying that, I have started to use some of the Kabuto tools. Now they're offering monitoring and patch management, stuff like that. So I'm still doing that behind the scenes. You know, if something comes up in between our 3 months appointment, you know, they can send me a message, or I can send them a message saying, hey, something doesn't look right, or your Adobe Reader thing failed. Let's take a look at it. Still, I think having that phone call every 3 months is important and just a little bit more than the average one.
Right. Oh, no, that makes perfect sense. I'm glad that I really kind of like that you've got this hybrid approach and you're not all automated. I am still surprised to this day, all the people that actually don't know anything about things like auto runs. Mm-hmm. And never look at the background processes that are actually running in the computer to see if they had seen anything weird. I mean, if you've ever looked at auto runs, obviously you know that there will be things that pop up, turn on and turn off, and that's normal for a lot of programs. But then if you'll see something that is just like pegging the CPU and just taking all the resources, and just you're like, ooh, that doesn't look right. Or right. It's like a gobbledygook, and you're like, I need to figure out where that is. And there's right. still a lot of people that don't know actually how to use that at all. It's very easy.
Right. That and Process Explorer also, you know, shows, yes. you know, if they're, you know, if they're saying the computer's slow, well, I go in there and I see, oh yeah, 75% CPU usage by, the Western Digital backup manager or something that's sitting there not even doing a backup. So, you know, just little things like that. I can, you know, go behind the scenes. And again, that's a little more than what a monitoring program will look for.
But Mark, I don't know if you know this or not, but you can't just make it on residential. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Well, you know, when the iPad came out, that's what people were saying, but my numbers each year, keep going up. So, I would wholeheartedly disagree with that. Now, the patience for residential customers, it does require some patience. You know, again, you're dealing with people that are not very computer savvy. They're going to fall for the tricks of the pop-up, websites and stuff like that. You know, a lot of times I find myself biting my tongue, you know, when someone calls and said, this guy just called and I gave him my credit card and now there's a password on my computer. You know, I've got to bite my tongue and not, blame them for it. A lot of times I'm saying, you know, that they're very good at what they're doing. They're scammers. I've got to, you know, talk to them as I would talk to my grandmother, for example.
Right.
I wouldn't lay blame on my grandmother. You know, I would talk, saying, oh, this is terrible what they're doing. And you know, they're very good. And they're very sneaky. And we're going to take care of this, you know, for you. So that's what I'm good. You know, that's what I do. Interesting. I want to go off of that because I was actually at a lady's house who had recently been, paid a scammer. You could see the text files on her computer for, 123 support or whatever. Ugh. And, you know, what she paid him and how much she paid and all that stuff. So, you know, she called me in just kind of for a checkup. As I was, you know, making sure they didn't do anything mischievous behind the scenes, running security, different scans and stuff and just looking at things, I actually get a call on my cell phone. Now, typically I do not answer my cell phone with a client, but she was actually in the other room, you know, off in the kitchen. And I knew right away from the telephone call that it was a scammer because, you know, the phone number was like 3749 or something, you know, like a 4-digit number.
Right.
Obviously a spoof number. So I pick it up. And, he calls me by my name, calls me by my last name. I happen to know that Dell had their database hacked or something went on with Dell, because the number that they were calling me from is a number that I've only given to Dell and very few other companies. So I knew it was, you know, he got it from the Dell database. And he's saying, you know, oh, we're detecting things coming for your computer. I said, you should be ashamed of what you're doing. You know, you're a scammer. You know, when you get hit by a bus tomorrow walking down the street, you know, you'll remember all these people you've scammed. And he, you know, he's very convincing, you know, didn't really get, you know, upset with me about my comment. He said, no, we're not a scammer, you know. And I just, at that point, hung up. I didn't have time for him. But it just, they're very good at what they do. And, you know, we just have to be better and educate our customers. And,
well, I think that's the hardest thing, though, is when you do educate, because I've had my customers do the same exact thing. And I tell them time and time again, just call me.
Right.
And I will take care of the problem. And I will let you know if it's legit or not legit. But yeah, most of the time, if it's not me and I'm your local guy, it's not going to be somebody that's, especially, and I hate to say this, but coming from a different country, mm-hmm, it's not local. It's not going to be your friendly neighborhood computer guy, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Oh, so yeah, it's frustrating. And I feel bad for the people that get scammed and pay the money, and you have to tell them, you got to go down and file a police report. You need to shut down that credit card, try to, you know, get rid of those charges, all this stuff that they have to do that you can help with some of it, but a lot of it they have to kind of do on their own.
Yeah.
And so you're stuck in between a rock and a hard place. You want to help, but there's only so much you can do. You can fix the problem on the computer and go from there. And
I know. Right. I know the Federal Trade Commission has a good website that I point a lot of my customers to that show, you know, first of all, they have several, you know, real short videos on how the whole system works, you know, and
okay,
you know, why you shouldn't fall for it. In fact, I'll put it in that link in the show notes, because
okay,
I think they're very valuable there, you know, and it puts it at their level. It doesn't, you know, they're not talking, you know, tech, you
right,
know, they're, you know, they put it in good language that people can understand. And they also say, you know, yeah, what should you do after you've let someone into your computer and stuff like that. So they have some real good, concise advice. And I typically point people that way. One thing I have helped with is when I write out my job sheet on what I did on their computer, I'll put, you know, that they could give to their bank if they need to, you know, customer was contacted by a remote support scammer. And left information about Federal Trade Commission, notes about this, you know, being a widespread scam, and you know, just kind of, you know, involving governmental agencies into it as well. So
okay,
so I'll put that link in the show notes.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I think that's something good that a lot of people need to be enlightened on, and I don't know how to get it through to the customer that, If I'm your tech person, then feel free whenever. I mean, voicemail is 24/7, right? Just call. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I get a chance, I will get back to you and take care of the problem. Most of the time, mm-hmm, remotely. Mm-hmm. And we just maybe need to clean a couple things up. And hopefully you didn't let them remote into the machine. But, you know, right, it's one of those things that you get scared by things that show up in your email or mm-hmm, things that pop up on your screen. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm infected. I need to get this taken care of right now. So I hate to say it, but human behavior is very, very predictable.
I've now gone as far as actually, when I'm on their computer, I will type in oogle.com without the first G. If you go to oogle.com, and technicians out there do this in a sandbox or something, just in case that site now, you know, is now an infected website. But, you know, at least when I'm there in front of their computer, I know how to deal with it if something, you know, something starts asking to download or install or something like that. But oogle.com will redirect to one of those fake websites that says, and I'll show them, you know, of course, they hear the beeping noise, and I'll kind of laugh at the whole presentation of the website, you know, say, see, we typed in Oogle, but now it shows us on, you know, your computer is infected.co or whatever, you know. So I show, you know, I show them really all the details, you know, hear the scary sound they're playing, look at the phone number, look at the grammar that they're using. So I show them what this actually looks like. So when they see this on their own time, they're going to go, oh yeah, Mark showed me that this is just a scam and all I got to do is just turn off my computer and it goes away. You know, so I found that to be helpful, and hopefully they will remember it 3 weeks after I've shown it.
I think that's the biggest problem. And, you know, it's funny because on my secondary computer here, I just typed in Google.com, and of course, OpenDNS flagged it and won't let me through. So that's a good thing as far as the it you can do the free filtering. Now, I've often wrestled with this of whether I want to be responsible for the residentials to actually do something to their router that if all of a sudden they can't get online, then I'm kind of responsible to try to help them figure it out, even though I might not have done anything wrong.
Right.
So, but
I think OpenDNS is definitely a good one. And I can't think of any of my clients that would need to get beyond something that their general, you know, blocking, you know, would cover. So.
Yeah, I love it because I just do a generic block as far as, you know, I mean, just silly things like pornography, you know, the main ones. Now, to be honest with you, I had to turn off, I think it was lingerie, because if you go to any desktop wallpaper sites to just download a desktop wallpaper, it blocks every single one of those sites with that filter in. So, but yeah, for the most part, I can stay away from the really, really bad stuff where I'm, you know, probably going to get infected with this, that, or the other. Or really, a lot of times, I think infections, in my opinion, are still done from the standpoint of somebody has to click on something somewhere, whether it be in a browser, in an email. I don't, you know, people have talked about these drive-by, and I guess they exist. I'm not going to say they don't, but these drive-by, you know, viruses that just pop up in your system and just start running. I've never seen one.
Yeah, majority of the time you do have to click run or you know, something like that. You're right. Yeah.
So,
one other thing on the computer maintenance plan that I'm doing, I've now taken the word remote out of it because I'm now starting to schedule up to 6 months out and on site. So I've got this one customer I think of off the top of my head that I'm seeing tomorrow. They've got, you know, four laptops in their family, and I just go over there every 6 months, you know, work on all of them on the kitchen counter, you know, while one scan, you know, I just, you know, start running tools, and then I'm there answering their questions. If they just got new phone and they want to ask me questions about that, they can as well. Well, I'm just kind of running these things all on their kitchen counter. But then when I'm done, okay, let's schedule the 6 month appointment out, you know, and when we'll be back and or when I'm going to be back. And, you know, so it basically puts them on a schedule, kind of like your dentist does, you know, when you go to the dentist and he sets your next appointment for 6 months out, or even my eye doctor does this, he sets your next year's appointment. So everybody's setting this next appointment. So again, that's locking them into being with you, locking them into a time. Sure. Yeah. If something comes up, they have a trip, whatever, things can be rescheduled. The service that I'm using for this actually, it was brought up on a previous Podnuts Daily by another tech, Acuity Scheduling is who I'm using. And I found their service to be great. And, you know, again, I can put different types of schedules you know, appointments on there. So I have my remote appointments that typically will go 3 months out. I do my on-site for 6 months out. I've got different times for different things. And then as an administrator, I can just go in and manually schedule things myself rather than them scheduling it.
Okay.
So yeah, works out real good.
Now, Mark, you realize that with the way you're doing things, you're actually moving backwards. You're not actually moving forward in your, I'm being facetious, but you know, a lot of people, I hear all the time technicians out there, and I agree with what you said earlier about technicians. You have to, when it comes to residential, you've got to learn how to deal with people a little bit better and stuff like that. But everybody's like going, oh, I'm changing over to business. I'm moving to business. I'm moving to MSP. Oh, I just threw up. And it's like, okay, if you're not happy doing residential, that's one thing. But I think there's a lot of people out there who go, oh, you know what? There's just no money in break fix anymore, which I hate that term too. But people use it all the time. And I think you're a prime example of somebody that is doing it different. You're doing it for what works for you. And you actually are having that one-on-one with the customer, which a lot of technicians don't get.
Right.
You know, so I applaud you on that. That's really great. I love to hear how people do things a little bit differently, and not that everybody has to do everything the same, but you should be able to adjust it to the way that you like to do it. And everything really in this industry is feasible to do. You just got to figure out how you want to do it and what's going to work best for you.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if I was handling business customers, you know, they don't want the one-on-one so much. They don't have time to sit there and talk and you know, chat. You know, they've got a busy executive they're dealing with or whatever. So, you know, that, you know, but for residential, for what I'm doing, it works well for me. So that's great.
That's good. Now, what moved you to the point of going to on-site versus doing it remotely, though?
Typically, when they have more than one computer. Now I could do them remotely as well, but I have some customers that always always seem to ask more questions, or they'll have questions about their Android phone or their iPhone or something. And that's a little more difficult to do.
Okay.
When you're remote,
right.
You know, rather than say, go to settings, go to this, go to that, you know, it's nice when I can be there, see their layout, you know, look at their router, you know, and again, they always seem to have some questions for me. And it doesn't, you know, I set aside for the on-sites about an hour and a half. But, you know, if we go a little over, a little under, it's not, you know, it's not a big deal. And it also gives me a chance to, you know, extend out the appointment a little bit more. If I know I don't have my next appointment for, you know, an hour from now, I can possibly extend the appointment out. You know, maybe we were originally scheduled for an hour and a half. Maybe I can extend it out to 2 hours by, you know, looking at the new printer they just got or the new phone they got, or I look at, you know, they like geography things. You know, they've got all these maps on the wall. Let me show them, you know, maybe they haven't seen before where, you know, Google Earth, you know, hey, let me show you Google Earth. I see you're into maps, you know, so I can always think of things to talk about and bring up and ways to extend the appointment beyond just an hour or whatever. And since I charge by the hour, the more time I'm there, the more money I make.
Nice. Okay. Yep. That's a great explanation. I really, really like that.
Yep. So, of course, I want to get onto another subject here, tracking all these appointments. This is something that I've been working on for a while. And now, are you still using a spreadsheet to track your appointments, or have you gone on to?
So the spreadsheet that I use is actually just for my accounting purposes for business transactions. No, I actually use Repair Shopper, which has a calendaring in it, where I can basically set a calendar from there or from my phone, and it goes back and forth. So, I just have it hooked into my Google Calendar, and it works fine for me. What I like about the Google Calendar myself is that depending on, and my customers aren't very far if I actually have to leave the house, but what will end up happening is they'll say, hey, you need to leave at this time in order to make it on time.
Oh, yeah.
And they so, give you... Yeah, I get that notification that pops up on my phone, and I really like that. So it kind of works well for me hand in hand with the calendar on Repair Shopper.
Right. Well, since 2003, I've been using a spreadsheet. And last year, I have tried, a couple of the different ones out there, Repair Shopper and you know, some of the other ones that you've had on Podnets, but none of them really worked for what I'm doing. A lot of them were overkill, you know, the ticketing system. You know, my customers, since I'm doing everything, you know, I'm going there, I'm fixing everything on site, they don't need a email reminder, you know, 30 minutes into the appointment saying, oh, I'm almost done type thing, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So they're a little bit overkill for my business. So I happened to run across, but I did want something mobile. And I wanted something where I could kind of a mobile app where I could go in and check from, not only put in the date and the amount I collected from the customer, and, you know, I could pick from a list of what their operating system is, and I could pick from a list whether this was an on-site appointment or a remote appointment. And then I could pick from a list saying, you know, what was the reason I was called out there for? You know, was it for because they got a scam call, or the computer was slow, or, you know, they had a virus or whatever. And then I can also pick from a list of other things that I did while I was there. You know, I helped them with their mobile device. I hook up hooked up their Roku device, you know, whatever. So I was initially looking off of Google Sheets and found an app. Let's see, trying to remember how this all came about. I was looking on Google Sheets and they had something where, I had made a survey. So I made it where basically I would answer things on this survey and it allows you these different kind of options. Well, then I found off of Google Sheets something called AppSheet. And what this does is it's similar to like filling out a survey, but again, you could do it on your phone and then it takes all the results of what you're entering on your phone and puts it in a spreadsheet. And then it can, can summarize the total by the day or the month or whatever. So that's one of the links I'm putting in the show notes is something called AppSheet that I think is the greatest thing since sliced bread for my business of what I'm using for tracking my jobs. And then the great thing about this is it's all searchable. So if I saw Jane Doe, I can, search for Jane Doe and see, I was there on January 29th. I was on there on April 15th. I can see exactly what I did. I can even take a picture in the app from my phone of the written job sheet of everything else I did or including her signature on the form or whatever. So it's really flexible and been real happy with it. So techs that are maybe just getting started out might want to check out what I've done with AppSheet. It was very easy to put together. They can go off of my app that I've already created and they can create their own. So check it out.
Yeah, very cool. I'm looking at it right now and you're right. This is very, very simple and very easy for somebody to just start using and put their customer information in there. As long as you got a way to track it, however that works for you. And sometimes the simpler, the better in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, a lot of the other, when I looked at the other companies that you've featured on there, a lot of them were, again, just too much stuff, asset tracking, stuff like that. That's I don't need all that stuff. I just want, probably 10 different things. The date, the time, how much I collected, was it on site, what their operating system was, stuff like that. And then I can go, drill down on this on the spreadsheet, on the Google sheet and say, 37% of my customers are still on Windows XP or whatever. I'm not looking at that figure right now, but, I can go back and look at some of those stats, just for curiosity or what's the main reason I'm being called out there for, or, 27% of my jobs are that I'm going to are for the maintenance plan, so I can see, maybe I can make that up to 30% or whatever. So it's really interesting. And over time, I'd like to be able to see how this, I'm doing less virus removals these days, or I'm doing more scam calls these days or something. So you can, over time, again, I just started this year, so I only have 1 year's worth of data in this particular thing. I thought about putting in the last 12 years worth of data, but I just haven't gotten to that point. But over the years, as this builds, I think it'll be interesting to see how things progress and how trends change and, if I'm doing more with mobile devices or whatever. So should be interesting.
Yeah, no, very interesting. I think this is great. Very cool.
So
good find.
Yeah, I just kind of ran across it. Believe it or not, I put together my whole spreadsheet. I paid for the Wi-Fi on a United Airlines trip back from Hawaii and decided, I'm gonna put this thing together. So in about, the 5-hour flight or whatever, I put it all together. And, of course, I've tweaked it a little bit since then, but I'm definitely real happy with it. And the fact that I could do it from my mobile phone is the best because, most of my jobs or say 67% of my jobs are all mobile. So.
That's good to have. Now, see, Paco would really, really like you because, you're a stats and figures type guy. So,
yep.
Yeah, I always make fun of him, but I'm not going to make fun of you. No, it's good to have that information. And I think, quite honestly, a year's worth of information is plenty, especially, like you said, things have changed over the last 12 years and we're not doing the same things exactly like we were 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Very cool.
Let's see, what else am I using in my website? On my website, actually, a lot of us are using WordPress for our websites. And with recent hacking and security issues and stuff, I I have secured my website a little bit more than just what WordPress provides. One of the plugins I'm using, and this may have been mentioned by one of the other one of your other guests before, or maybe something similar. But I am using a plugin I'm using, and it's called WPS Hide Login. So rather than get to my website by going computertextreno.com/
WP-admin.
Right, yeah. That's just going to bring up a 404 page. I've got my own custom one that you that will let you actually log in. So
okay.
that's one thing to secure your site right there. Second of all, I have, I am now using Duo. Let's see. It's called Duo Two-Factor Authentication for WordPress Logins. DuoSecurity.com, and they will let me either, after I log in, then they can either send me a text message on my phone, or they can call me. The one I like the best is actually install the Duo app on your phone, and they can push a simple, I can't remember the name, what they call it, but basically I just get a flash on my phone saying, you're trying to log in, yes or no, or accept or deny. So I can just click accept, and within a second, I get redirected to my, okay, here's your dashboard. So, and I don't know if Google's been doing this lately too, with their, rather than send text messages, a lot of times you could, if you have the Google app installed on your iPhone, or I think on all Android phones now, their second factor authentication is just press a yes or a no on the phone. And that is much easier for me and my clients as well.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. Now I still use the Google Authenticator on my Android phone, and it gives you the 6-digit thing that you need to plug, you need to punch in.
But right.
I've set it up for LastPass. I've set it up for the, one of my main Google login. The other ones I don't really care about. And There's a couple other things. Oh, I think my Patreon account, that was another dual factor authentication, and Ubisoft, which is a gaming site. So Those things are on there. And then the Microsoft one is Microsoft's own app, which I actually like because it's slick like you're talking about. It just basically pops up on your phone. You hit the button and you can, when you're logging your Microsoft account, it gives that dual factor authentication, but all you got to do is press a button on your phone and boom, it lets you in.
Yeah. So there's no more typing numbers. Not that typing, 6 digits was really tough, but for some of my clients, it is tough. So now they just make sure they have their phone by them.
Oh, I am all for having the customer have something that's much, much easier in protecting them at the same time. Again, What we do for ourselves, we might look at it as simple as putting in 6 digits. For them, wait a minute, those 6 digits have switched because it only lasts 30 seconds.
Right.
And, so it becomes confusing. And so if you can make it where it's a one button press, that's awesome.
Right. And I can't tell you how many customers if I've helped them with password issues or, some issue or something, and I say, okay, you need to get your cell phone because they're going to send us a temporary number. They'll go write that number down like it's something important they need to keep forever. It's like, you don't need to write that number down. You're never going to see that number again in your life. Google's never going to send it to you again. So don't even bother writing it down. But yeah, that just kind of strikes me as funny each time that happens.
So two-factor authentication for WordPress. And you said WPS Hide Login plugin. And we'll have links to all these in the show notes. Mark has already provided those. So that's really cool. I think a lot of times, one of the reasons I stopped doing my own website was, I didn't want to deal with the updates and all that kind of stuff anymore and making sure it was secure and just have somebody else do that.
Right. Right. So you're having someone else maintain your website?
I use TechSite Builder. So, from Matthew Rodella.
Oh, okay. So he's doing all the,
he does all the back end. He does it's on his server and everything's it just runs. I can go in there and make whatever changes and stuff I want, but he's got the back end where he's making sure it's updated and ready to go. So
nice. Yes. Yeah. These days,
it's a pain. Even if you like to do it, it's when you, if you're doing it for yourself, it's still a pain.
Well, a lot of times, even though WordPress will typically update itself, it won't update itself from different versions. So, you know, say going to from 4.6 to 4.7 or whatever, it won't do that update, but it'll do the point ones or whatever. It'll do that update by itself. But you have to manually go and do the big version updates, or your plugins. Those don't get updated automatically as well. So, these days you really have to keep up on that stuff. So, and there's so many security holes these days and issues that, before you know it, your website's hosting, some spam link or something. So, yeah, that's what I've done anyway to hopefully keep my website secure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, anytime, if you can do two-factor authentication, authentication. Yeah. I just made up a word.
Say that 10 times fast.
Exactly. But if you can have that second factor where you're going in and getting a code or getting a text message or something, that's perfect. Now, going back to, because I haven't used it yet, you said there's a Google app that you can download that'll give you that one button press.
Yes, if you've got the Google app on your iPhone,
okay,
or and you're signed in with your Google account, or I think on Android phones it's just by default. But now instead of texting you numbers, they will just send you a prompt on your phone, because you're already logged into your Google account on your Android phone. So you'll just get a prompt and hit yes or no.
Very cool. That's very cool.
Interesting article on two-factor authentication and some of the drawbacks still on Brian Krebs' blog. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but he's security researcher. Yep. And his website was recently DDoS. So, in fact, he did the story based on some information that I'd sent him, where my daughter was receiving text messages saying, please send us back the 6-digit number that was just sent to your secondary email address. And, sent that, a couple screenshots to him. And at the time, I couldn't figure out how they knew this information, because I secure my daughter's Gmail account pretty well. And I think we narrowed it down to probably the LinkedIn hacking, where, my daughter had given, LinkedIn, all email addresses, all phone numbers, because, when you're with LinkedIn, you give all the possible ways to get a hold of someone. Cause if you're, looking for a job or whatever, you want them to, have everything available. So I think that's how we eventually found that, how they were doing it. But they're still, even a couple of weeks ago, still sending. Actually, the last one was, supposedly from Snapchat. The thing is, with these people that are sending, these scammers that are sending the text messages, they're typically from 10-digit numbers, not the short code 5-digit numbers. Whenever you get something from Google or Yahoo or something like that, it's typically 5 digits, not a 10-digit phone number.
Right.
So that's one way to figure that out. Yeah, interesting.
So now his site got attacked. You said a DDoS attack?
Right.
Okay. And for people that don't know, that's denial of service attack. And it's basically where your website is just pinged with all these zombie bots out there on people's computers, or sometimes they'll use actually the world time clock. I guess there's a hack around there, but anyways, you can send this information out and basically just render a site so that people can't get to it. It's malicious, but it's not. It basically just brings the site down, is what it does. People can't get to the site.
In fact, they found that what brought his site down was mainly about, I want to say it was a couple dozen Internet of Things devices. So, a webcam or a camera that's connected to the Internet.
Like my Ring doorbell. Thermom-
right. Yeah. Wasn't Ring. I didn't, was not on the list, but there's since been a list of about, a couple different dozen different items that are vulnerable. And later they found out even if you change the password on that, they still have an SSH password that can't easily be changed, or there's a default one that can't be changed. So it's a mess. Some interesting reading if you're interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah,
on his website, because put up a lot of things since his attack.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. I do read some of his stuff. I just when I get the time, but no, it's always interesting and neat to keep up with the what's going on, because a lot of times people are just hooking up these Internet of Things and they're not secure, and
right.
They're known to be not secure, but the average person doesn't know that.
Yep.
So they yep. plug it in, they give it an IP address or whatever, or their router just gives them a, you know, automatic, IP address, and boom, they're on their way.
Yep. Another thing I'm looking for when I do my computer maintenance plan is if their router is up to date as well. You know, is there a firmware update available? Yeah. None of the automated, plan or, you know, services are doing that to my knowledge, you know, looking for router updates. So
no, absolutely not.
So that's something I look at as well.
Now, do you find a whole lot of firmware updates anymore with
for routers?
Yeah, with
The current ones, yeah, not the old G routers, but definitely the N and AC routers. They're starting to update more frequently. You know, they realize the importance of that. So yeah,
that's good, because usually you buy a router, you get you might get one firmware update. And then the thing dies and you got to buy another one.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So one thing I also do in my business, I thought I'd mention that when people call me, well, first of all my clients I have in my contacts in my phone. So when someone calls me, I see that it's, Betty Jones calling or whatever. If I'm not currently expecting a call from her, I let all clients go to voicemail. Now, first of all my existing clients, they'll do that. They're not, this is not necessarily a new client. All my new clients actually go to it, are given a different phone number to call, and those are all answered remotely. But people that have my cell phone number, which are all my clients, I don't answer any of them because, I'm driving, I'm with a client. In fact, that's what I put in my message. I'm driving. I'm with a client, so I can't take your call right now. Please leave a message. Another reason I do that is because half the time, by the time I call them back, an hour, a couple hours later, they've already solved their problem. Or I can figure out how quickly I need to call them back. If they're just calling in a simple question about their AOL account or something, I might wait half a day to call them back. Where if someone just, is on the phone right now with Microsoft, I'll call them right away.
Sure.
And I wish my clients would not figure that they need to answer every single call just because it's ringing. but they do. So in fact, when people get scammed, I'll mention to them, hey, you don't need to answer every call. If it's important enough, they'll leave a message. And, the scammers never leave calls, or when they do, you have time to think about it. Oh, that doesn't sound right. Or I don't owe the IRS.
I love having I tell people all the time, if I meet you for the first time or something, I tell people, hey, if your name and number's not in my phone directory on my cell phone and it's an unknown number, and I will just, it automatically goes to voicemail. Now, when I get to know you and I actually add you in my list, when I see that it's you, then I can choose whether to answer it. And I use actually different ringtones. So like if a coworker is calling me, the Looney Tunes ringtone comes up and I can figure out whether I want to call them back or not, or answer the phone.
Right.
When my parents call or anybody in my family, it's the Addams Family, things like that. So that right. way I don't have to take the stupid phone out of my pocket to figure out, hey, do I want to talk to said group of people at this point?
Right. Now, is that on your Android phone?
Yes.
Where you have that option? Oh, okay. Yeah. I know on the iPhone they don't, because I remember when I had my BlackBerry, I used to like it where if someone was in my list, I could do a different ringtone than someone who was not in my list.
Yeah.
But on the iPhone, that's not available. I mean, you can do specific ringtones for specific people, but I'm not going to go set, 2,000 ringtones to, for all one way. So they need to.
Well,
iOS 11 though.
I'm using an old app that somebody made a long time ago when I think the Android phone first came out, and it's called Group Ringtones.
Oh, okay.
So what's cool about it, and it still works today, even after all the updates, and I can just go in, I can grab a group and go, this group gets this ringtone. and this group gets this. So it takes me like less than a minute to go through them all, pick my ringtones, and then move on. So I don't have to do them individually.
Right. Group ringtones.
So, okay. You know, someday iOS will catch up.
Yes, someday. We'll see.
Now, what?
And then some of my clients will.
I'm sorry. Oh, I was going to say, why do you use an iPhone versus an Android phone? I'm just curious.
Well, actually, I use both, but my main one is the iPhone.
Okay.
And I just like it better. The interface is better, I guess, more reliable. Now, okay. However, I am using Project Fi for a secondary phone, and that is an Android phone. And, you know, that way I know both phones real well. And so when I have a customer with an Android phone ask me a question, I know how to, you know, I know exactly where to go. And when I have a customer with an iPhone, I can answer their questions too. So, you know, having both operating systems is advantageous to helping customers.
No, I get that. No, and a lot of people do actually like the iPhone. It does work well. So I make fun of it, not because I want to, just because I can, but... I think there's different tools for different people. And I'm always curious because I understand that most technicians still carry an iPhone regardless of what you support. I mean, they say most podcasts are actually downloaded. So over 70% is still through iTunes, their podcast app. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So, but I'm always just curious because I know a lot of people that are tech savvy. They love their iPhones and they use them all the time. So
yeah. Sure, there's some things that I wish they had, and they'll eventually get it. But that's what I do.
Cool.
One problem though, with people having my cell phone number is sometimes they will text. Now, actually, I don't mind customers texting me. Because that's oftentimes I can respond quicker. Say if I'm on site with a client, I'm not going to pick up the phone and talk to someone, but
right.
If they send me it's easy to text, if I'm not sitting there training someone, I can, just text them and give them an immediate response or pretty quick. The problem is when I go on vacation, this is what I need to resolve is, and I've looked for an app for that and they don't have anything, but, just like I put an auto reply in my email, they need some kind of auto reply for texting saying, hey, I'm on vacation. I'll contact you here in a week or whatever. But
gotcha.
For those
okay.
that text me, I don't have that option.
Yeah. I've often thought about that. So what, and you gave your phone number out to your existing client base so they can get a hold of you a little bit better and you know who's calling and when they're calling. And so it's not just one of those things where you're just getting somebody calling in and you're not sure whether it's a new customer or an old customer. So I think that's kind of smart too, because then if you have a client base you're working with on a consistent basis, then it's a good thing to know who's calling when. I just know a lot of people out there will be like, I'm not giving my customers my phone number.
Right. Yeah, I've never had a problem with that.
Okay.
I guess it's the previous businesses that I'd been into. I always want to be able to reach them to reach me directly.
Right.
Then, however, again, as I mentioned, I, rarely, if ever, pick up the phone. And I figure if it's important enough, they'll leave a message, or at least I can see their caller ID and I can call them back.
Right.
So.
Okay.
But again, all my advertising, the number on my website, the number in the yellow pages, stuff like that, that all actually is a different number. That's not my cell phone number that gets answered by an operator that, will answer the phone and talk to them and
okay.
go from there. So.
So you don't have to take those phone calls either.
Right.
Wow, that's awesome. Less time on the phone, more working. That's good.
Right. And then I get a message for anything important or, if it's a new client needing something or whatever, get the immediate email saying what it's regarding. Or if it's someone's trying to sell me something, I can just get a message that, oh, yeah, it's someone trying to sell you something and I don't need to call them back. So,
right.
Whatever.
Okay. It's good.
So my next big project I'm thinking of promoting here is I think it's time we start moving clients off of Yahoo Mail and AOL Mail while we're at it.
Oh, you've just hit a nerve, because both of those, I mean, most people that I know, most of my customers are on Yahoo or AOL.
Yeah.
You know, there's some that are on Gmail.
Yes.
But it's hard to get somebody to switch over. So I'm curious, have you found a way that you're able to take somebody and go, listen, we're going to move you over here. We're going to forward all these emails here, and we're going to send an email out and let all your people know that this is your new email address.
I have done that, and I'm actually, offered as a service as part of my hourly rate. So, you know, typically takes me about an hour to set everything up, and, you know, I'll go draft the email. Hi, please send your messages to here. What I'll also do is typically, and I recommend them doing this for about a year or so, is I'll set up forwarding in Yahoo to their new Gmail address. So I don't have Gmail pull it in. I have Yahoo push it out.
Okay.
A couple reasons I do that. First of all, you know, that way they're going to get all the email in Gmail. I stress the benefits of Gmail's better spam filtering.
Yes. Yes.
Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I say, well, you know, if this just totally does not work for you, you can always just go back and log into yahoo.com, and you're going to see this exact same thing as you used to. So they still get all their email over in Yahoo as well. What I will do, however, though, is I delete, after I export their contacts, I delete all their contacts. So just in case their Yahoo account is hacked, they've got no one to send, you know, their messages to. They've got an empty address book.
Very good. That's a good idea.
I'll export it as a CSV file.
Okay.
On their computer, and then I'll upload it to Google. I offer that as a service, and I plan on, I think now is a ripe time to offer that more as a service. And I look at, you know, the spam emails that I get, and you know, all of them are from AOL and Yahoo accounts. You know, the ones that say hi or hey or check this out or Dr. What's his name recommends this. You know, all the ones, and you can see the 15 other people that it was sent out to. You know, it's always from a Yahoo or an AOL account. It's never from a Gmail account, never from a Hotmail or Microsoft account. So, I think they've got not only security issues, but I have a feeling they've got people that are, working on the, you know, possibly employees or contractors that work for them that are, getting into their databases, and, you know, who knows where it goes from that, but.
Right. Yeah. It's a mess. They're both very vulnerable, and most customers have to change their passwords at least a couple times a year.
Right.
You know, so. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I walk into some of my good customers have been around for a while, and they're like, yeah, I had to change my password. Can we change it back to this, or can we change it to something else? Because I changed it, but because my account was hacked and so on and so forth. And I'm like, again?
Right.
You know, but that's very common.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you know, even if they're changing security questions and stuff, it's still happening. So, and I've been following this for years, particularly on Yahoo, where again there's got to be something behind the scenes that's happening, you know, rogue employees or rogue contractors or something that are, you know, that have access to the data that might be selling it off or whatever. Just my hunch.
That's a good hunch, because it's like, why are they so vulnerable, and why are they getting, because I mean, email, we're talking about, and it's an old way of sending information. It's not brand new, and yet Yahoo and AOL are probably the two oldest. How has Gmail caught up and surpassed a lot of what people are doing? Or even like you said, the Microsoft accounts. I really don't get spam on. Well, I don't get spam on my Gmail accounts at all. Not that gets to me. I mean, there's spam that obviously is in a spam folder, but it's very good at grabbing most of that stuff.
Well, I think I'm referring to the messages that I do get are from my clients that have Yahoo and AOL accounts. I'm never getting spam from my clients that have, you know, who have their account hacked at, you know, who have a Gmail account or a Microsoft account of some sort. So the accounts getting hacked are, you know, AOL and Yahoo accounts from what I see.
Yeah.
And I know that Yahoo has recently implemented two-factor authentication, at least for Yahoo.com accounts. They're not for their third party, you know, because we're out here in the West, so we've got a lot of, you know, SBC Global accounts and NVBell.net and okay. you know, the all the baby bells that since went to SBC Global and AT&T.net accounts, you know, those hosted accounts, those aren't getting the extra protection of two-factor authentication and stuff like that. So,
right.
But even those ones that are getting two-factor, I've still seen those accounts hacked as well. So, you know, I don't think something's going on.
Right. Wow.
So.
Yeah, email.
Yep.
So what else do you got for us? That-
let's see. How many clients do I have that they'll go buy an external hard drive, hook it up, and
never I'm back anything up?
I'm backed up. Yeah. I've run into that quite a bit where, yeah, I see that external hard drive on there, and but there's nothing on it because you've never set up the software to do that. Or when they have set up the software, you know, it's not running or it's out of date, or, you know, I will typically set up the Microsoft, you know, if they're still on Windows 7, I'll set up the Windows 7 backup and restore. If they're on Windows 8 or Windows 10, I'll set up file history.
Okay.
Because it's, when it comes restore time, you know, if their hard drive does crash, I'm not having to, you know, go look for the, oh, you know, they use WD Smartware version 3 for the backup, so I got to find the same kind of backup software, or did they use the Seagate software, or, you know, at least when we're using the Windows software, it's, you know, as soon as they restore their operating system, it's just easier to do the restore when it's, you know, using the Windows backup program rather than, you know, the one included with the drive.
Now, have you found that, because, and maybe this is, I haven't used it in a long time, but I found back in the day with the Windows software, it would seem like if it worked, it worked. But if a file got corrupted anywhere in that image or that backup, it would like, it would hose the whole thing. And there was no way that you could actually get in there and look at the information. Is that still true today?
Yes, I would agree it's limited. And for some customers, I've turned off the whole image backup and I'm just doing the file backup.
Okay.
That usually is pretty reliable. But if they are having problems, it's typically when it's trying to do the whole system image.
Gotcha. Okay.
So at least they get.
So I guess I didn't realize that it would actually, I thought that's the only thing it would do. I guess I didn't realize that it would actually back up the files themselves.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It does that separately. All it's right. actually a different thing. In fact, when you go through and set the options, there's a checkbox for include a system restore image as well, or not system restore, but a system image, I think they call it.
Okay.
So that I think is checked by default, and I usually leave that. But again, if there's a problem or they're having, you know, backup errors or whatever, I will uncheck that box, and that will usually solve the problem.
Okay. Very cool.
All right.
Well, anything else that that you wanted to cover tonight?
Nothing else on my list here.
Okay. We're almost at the hour mark anyway, so time flies okay. when you're having fun.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Oh, here's an annoyance that bugs me. Why do people put in a zip program when, again, in the operating system, you can extract all? You know, zipping and unzipping is built right into the operating system. And most of my clients, again, average age, you know, probably 65 to 70, they're not needing to zip something up to email someone. Right. They may get an occasional zipped file that all they need to do is just hit extract all. They don't need WinZip or, you know, 7-Zip or anything like that. So why even bother with the third-party zip programs? I don't know.
You know, for me, to be honest, it was a... It was a bad habit, and I was doing it for a long time because, you know, my fellow Linux users, you know, they would say you got to use open source programs and this and that and the other, and using anything in Windows is evil. And not being those guys are gonna hate me now. But no, the reality is I did it because back in the day there were certain zip files, whether they were RARs or regular zip files, that they would only open with certain programs. So I got into the habit when I was redoing a system or updating stuff is I would download these zip programs. Now, I'll be honest with you, I've learned a couple things from customers where, like a WinZip, right? Mm-hmm. They would try to go to download a WinZip program. They would look, they would search online for the latest, greatest WinZip. And this is how actually one of my customers got scammed. Found this website, called this number to get help when he tried to download the file. And so they loaded all this free software, one of it being WinZip and some other programs that were free to clean the computer, you know, registry, edit, or something. And charge them $450. And, oh, yeah, your lifetime warranty, you know. And it's like, so I'm with you. I think less is more anymore. And if something is anymore, if anything is in the Windows operating system already, I stop putting that stuff in. Now, the only caveat I have with that is like things like Adobe Reader. Now, a lot of people will go, hey, you know what? I'm going to load Foxit Reader up, blah, 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 blah. And that's all fine and dandy. Here's the problem. And a lot of people don't realize this. If I do not load the latest, greatest Adobe Reader up and actually have it update on its own, what will end up happening is, and I've had this happen so many times, it's not even funny. Somebody will take an old CD-ROM. Yes, I said CD-ROM. It's one of those circle things with the hole in the middle. And you shove it in the machine, and they're running some proprietary program that's, you know, dictionary on tape or what. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But the point is, it will have an Adobe Reader program on there, and it'll usually be something like Adobe Reader 5 or 6 or something like that. And what they'll do is they'll load that on their computer, which it has no ability to update at that point. And what ends up happening is, oh, I've just created it so my customer has a vector for the bad guys to get in, because now they've got an open hole in their system because I didn't put on something that could be updated on a regular basis and try my best to keep them safe. So that's why I don't use things like Foxit Reader. But going back to your WinZip, there's nothing wrong with the zipping program that's on the Windows operating system. The only thing I don't think it works for, and I don't see it a whole lot except on rare occasions, is RARs, RARs. Yep. And so you usually have to download WinRAR or, you know, get a licensed copy of that. And I keep it around for certain things. But yeah, for the most part, I use a zipping program that's on Windows because it works for 99% of the stuff.
Right. Yeah, I get maybe 1% of my clients actually need to open a RAR file. So yeah, that's why I don't do it. But that brings to mind when I'm setting up a new Windows 10 system, which this week I think I'm setting up three. A lot of people buying new computers and wanting my advice for that and where to shop and all that. So I'll send them down to Costco typically and you know, say, hey, you get the computer, I'll come set it up for you.
Nice.
But yeah, I'll load it up for with Adobe Reader. You're right, because you know they go to their employer's website that says, you know, if you want to download your employment form or whatever, you need Adobe Reader. And if they don't have Adobe Reader, they're going to not know what to do. So I do load Adobe Reader. Now I know Windows 10, I think, will open PDFs natively in either Edge or their external PDF yes. reader, but I still do Adobe Reader yep. just because most of the websites say Adobe Reader. So if they don't see it, they must need to go, you know, search for Adobe Reader free download on Yahoo and get the, you know, the one that comes with all the adware as well.
Right. Exactly.
Another thing I will load is, of course, Flash is built in now.
Yeah, I don't do Flash anymore. Yep.
Internet Explorer. Yep. Unless they have Firefox. If they've got Firefox, you have to download that version of Flash.
Who's using Firefox anymore?
Quite a few.
I'm kidding. I know.
Yeah. And I think that's it. But yeah, I don't even load Java anymore. I mean, there's so few things that need Java. I don't do it unless I know of they need it for a specific thing.
Exactly. Yep. I'm doing the same thing. So I've pulled a lot of that stuff out where I just don't load it anymore. I try to think what things could affect the customer over time that they would try to go search for themselves. So I try to set them up ahead of time so that they're not searching for that stuff, like you said. And hopefully it helps to keep them safe for now. To be honest with you, it really doesn't matter what I do because they end up getting malware and different things over time, and you end up going in and cleaning it out anyways. But yep. Hey, I'm trying.
Yep. Exactly.
Very cool. All right. Well, if that's it, Mark, I definitely appreciate you coming out and sharing all this information. I've learned a couple great nuggets tonight.
Great. Well, again, I appreciate you and you know, all the other techs that come on. I think together we all learned a lot of stuff, and you're definitely providing a great service to the community where we can all share stories and tips and tricks and stuff like that, and makes the profession a much easier thing to do.
Yep. You're not a island unto yourself. You're actually in a community of people that we can all learn from. That's cool.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, Mark, if people want to find out more about you or get in contact with you, how would they do that?
I am on the Google Plus, though I don't think many people use it anymore. It's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Or you can go to my website, which is, the shortest one is pc775.com or ctreno.com or computertexreno.com. I have all three because when I first got my domain, computertexreno made sense. But then when you start trying to tell people, you know, something to go type in, pc775.com is much shorter than computertexreno.com. So, and that's actually a tip there as well. You know, if you're Joe Bob's Computer Repair of Dallas.com, look for something to, you know, shorten that, you know, maybe do, you know, PC Dallas or, you know, maybe something with your city's name in it. You know, shorten the word computer, you know, something like that, that not only is, you know, that you can redirect to your main website, but is a lot easier for people to type.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear a lot of people are having problems with getting people their websites to download their remote support software because they can't understand them or, you know, whatever's going on, or people type it in wrong. So I agree with you, man. That's awesome. That's a great tip right there. Just forward that shorter URL and get people to your website much easier. If you can't type in PC775, I don't know what to tell you.
Of course, having a short city name is not, you know, Reno versus say San Luis Obispo or something.
Right. You know, okay.
That's a little bit, but you can always do, you know, something based off, you know, California, you know, CA or something.
Right.
Or, you know, you do your state's name or state's abbreviation or something like that. But there's another tip for you.
Excellent. All right. And you guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish, because I still do use it, or Twitter at TechNutPC. I kind of sort of use that. If you would like to be a guest on the show, email me at guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the Tech-Enabled Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.